Hello, this is Rob Gillis. Today I'm interviewing Thomas H. Moreland, town historian of Austerlitz in Columbia County. Thank you so much, Tom, for coming on my program.
My pleasure.
So you could tell us a little bit about Austerlitz. It seems to have a name that's familiar. There's an Austerlitz in Europe.
Yeah, the name of the town came from the state legislature when the town was established in 1818. The story goes that Martin Van Buren, later president, he was the state attorney general and in the legislature. He had this new town named Austerlitz in retribution for the fact that somebody named another town out in the Finger Lakes Waterloo, which was a big Napoleonic defeat. Van Buren was a big fan of Napoleon, so he put the name Austerlitz on our town. That was in 1818, but the settlement of the area really goes back to the 1750s. Early 1750s, this area was completely forested. There were no settlements at all. The Mohegan Indians, who claimed the area generally, never had a village here, so far as we know. They were over in Stockbridge, Massachusetts at that period of time. Settlement starts with a deed from the Mohegans in 1756 to a group of 75 grantees, mostly Connecticut people. It was a deed authorized by the colony of Massachusetts Bay. The Mohegans in Massachusetts Bay and the grantees all thinking that this area was in the colony of Massachusetts Bay. The deed was to 20,000 acres. Of the 75 grantees, 12 were Spencers, and thus the name Spencerstown was applied to the proprietorship, which was a New England form of government, that was organized in 1757. Settlement happened, many farms cleared. Two hamlets also grew up on the streams that provided water power for the mills. There was the hamlet of Green River, later called Austerlitz, on the Green River along today's Route 22. And then there was Spencertown, the hamlet as compared to the proprietorship of the entire area. Hamlet of Spencertown on the Punset Creek along today's Route 203. Both of those hamlets, I should say, are today historic districts on the National Register of Historic Places. Right from the start, there were troubles, however, in terms of the title to the land. While Massachusetts Bay thought this was within its territory, so did the colony of New York. So there were arguments back and forth, and that New York prevailed by the 1770s, meaning that Indian deed, which was not recognized in New York, conveyed no good title to the settlers. Even a greater problem was the Van Rensselaers. The Dutch had granted a patent to Killian Van Rensselaer in the early 1600s, to a vast area on both sides of the Hudson River, which included our area. So they viewed these New England settlers as squatters, having no right to the land at all. This led to petitions and lawsuits back and forth for several decades, and even to one military attack. In 1766, a group of 50 Crown troops, basically supporting the Van Rensselaer interests, attacked Spencertown and Nobletown, which is today's Hillsdale, seeking to disrupt the harvest and chase the settlers off the land or compelling them to pay rent to the Van Rensselaers. It didn't work. The settlers stayed, and the disputes continued for several decades. This area was known as the, quote, Land of Contention, close quote, a name given to it by a traveler who passed through in the 1750s. Finally, the Van Rensselaer dispute was settled in 1803 by no less than Alexander Hamilton, one of our nation's founding fathers, of course. He was a Van Rensselaer in-law, and he was the lawyer for the Van Rensselaer heirs. And he negotiated a settlement that consisted of an arbitration proceeding authorized by state legislation, where arbitrators would determine whether the Van Rensselaers or the individual farmers had good title to the land. And if the arbitrators determined that the Van Rensselaers had good title, which was almost certainly given those the state patents, the Van Rensselaers committed to selling the land to the individual farmers for a price that the arbitrators would determine. All that went very smoothly, and in 1804, you see about 104 deeds out from the Van Rensselaers to the individual farmers. So that finally ended that dispute. Notwithstanding the title problems, this area rapidly grew after the Revolutionary War, a lot of Yankees moving in, seeking farmland principally, and very soon there was no more forest left at all. All the land was farmed or grazed. There was a sheep boom in the country, and resulted from the tariff on English wool, which made raising sheep here and producing wool very profitable. That boom sort of peaked in 1845, and in that year there were over 18,000 sheep grazing on the hills of Austerlitz. The two hamlets grew and became quite lively commercial centers. Both Austerlitz and Spencertown were on the stagecoach route that led from Hartford to Albany, starting around 1794. Later, part of that became the Hillsdale and Chatham Turnpike. So that led to the developments of some hotels and inns. And of course, there were many, many shops in both hamlets and mills. And there were a few manufacturing interests. There was an iron foundry in Spencertown. There was a tool factory down in Upper Hollow Road that a fellow named Morris Brainerd started. And a little later, Charles Kinney had a wagon manufacturing interest in along Route 22 in Austerlitz, a section of Rose Grove. You can't see that view anymore because the forests have returned. Things have changed. As the population of the area increased, new towns were formed by the state. As I said, Austerlitz was formed in 1818. In 1820, it had a population of 2,355. That was the highest population that Austerlitz has ever had, which is, you know, striking when you think of it. You have a higher population in 1820 than you have today. Many beautiful houses were built during this prosperous era, basically 1780s through the Civil War. Number of impressive churches. Reverend Woodbridge, Reverend Timothy Woodbridge, should be highlighted here. He was blind. He'd gone blind while a student at Williams College, but it didn't slow him down. He was quite a charismatic fellow. He came to Green River in 1816, stayed till 1842. He founded a church, very impressive church, that looks a lot like St. Peter's that still exists in Spencertown. And he founded the Green River Academy, which was a private school. The locals in Green River had a hard time, though, paying his salary, and he finally got tired of haggling, and he accepted an invitation from St. Peter's and moved to Spencertown in 1842. In Spencertown, he founded the Spencertown Academy, which was built in 1847, and it became quite renowned as a private high school, attracting students both locally and some even from New York City and a couple from abroad. In retrospect, we see the 1840s as really the high point of Austerlitz, its fortunes. Prosperous farming, prosperous commerce in the hamlets. Things began to go downhill economically after the Civil War. The railroads went to Chatham. There were four lines to Chatham by the 1860s, and 100 trains departed and arrived every day in Chatham. So that none of the railroads touched the town of Austerlitz. So commerce moved as Chatham as well, basically, and so the hamlets declined as commercial centers in Austerlitz. Farming also declined. There was a lot easier land to farm out west, even western Columbia County, but we're also talking about western New York and the Midwest, particularly once the Erie Canal had opened, and then after the Civil War, further out west. So farms began to be abandoned here even a little bit before the Civil War, first in the eastern hills, which were not suitable for farming, and sheep were no longer prosperous because those tariffs on English wool had disappeared. So sheep grazing wasn't an economic solution for those eastern hills, so they were mostly abandoned. Then the hilly area in the northern part of the town, known as Macedonia, and gradually all over, farming declined. overnight. It happened over many decades. Farming was still very important here in the mid-20th century, but in steep decline. In 1870, there had been 194 farms in Austerlitz. In 1940, that number was down to 62. And essentially, we have no farms today at all. There's a nice quote from a book written by D.M. Ellis in 1946 that captures the situation. Quote, in the lush intervales of the Genesee Valley, the rolling countryside of Michigan, or the gold fields of California, there would be found those who had deserted the hills of eastern New York, close quote. And that certainly applies to the Austerlitz area. As both commerce and farming declined, why, so too did the population of the town. It's useful to compare the populations of Austerlitz as compared to Chatham and Ghent. And remember that the railroad center of the Chatham Village straddles those two towns. From 1850 to 1880, 1850 being really before the railroads, and 1880, the railroads are all there. So Austerlitz, the population declined from 1900 in 1850 to 1300 in 1880. Chatham and Ghent, by contrast, the population increased from 6100 in 1850 to 7500 in 1880. So over time, the forest reclaimed most of the town of Austerlitz. And of course, as the forest returned, so did the white-tailed deer. It's hard to envision, but there were no deer here at all during the agricultural era. But of course, they returned with a vengeance once those farms were abandoned. Today, there are certainly many more sheep than farmers. My wife, Olga, and I are in the habit of taking an evening drive around here on the back roads of Austerlitz looking for deer. One evening last year, we counted 128. So the deer are very much with us. The hamlets had become very quiet places by the turn of the 19th century, 1900. But yet many of the old houses survived, testifying to the more prosperous past. In 1899, a young local scholar named Eleanor Ambler captured the scene well. Quote, still as a picture lies the hamlet of Spencertown in an atmosphere of faded magnificence, close quote. About the only excitement in the town in the late 1800s was provided by the sordid story of Oscar Beckwith, a man who has come down to history known as the, quote, Austerlitz cannibal, close quote. A man of 70, in 1882, in his shanty located high up in the eastern hills of Austerlitz, Beckwith murdered his partner in an aborted gold mining venture, one Simon Vandercook. He dismembered Vandercook's body, probably intending to burn it in his stove, but he was discovered at that point and he fled to Canada. He hid out for 3 years in northern Canada, finally captured and returned to Hudson, where he was convicted of murder and hung in Hudson in 1888. The label cannibal may not be entirely fair. Someone claimed when they broke into his shanty that they had seen some human parts being cooked on Oscar's stove, a liver and a heart, maybe. But there was no proof of this at all at his trial. So his reputation perhaps has been unfairly sullied by the cannibal label. We certainly hate to see that. Murder and dismemberment seems bad enough. Despite the collapse of the farming economy, the hamlets of Spencertown and Austerlitz survived, though not as commercial centers. The automobile helped because that made it possible for local folks who enjoyed these hamlets as nice places to live to hold jobs in Pittsfield, Hudson, or further away. The other influence was the city folk who discovered this area as an attractive second or retirement home area. Some of those folks moving up here were very famous. Edna St. Vincent Millay moved to Austerlitz in 1926. And lived at her steepletop, as she called her farm, until her death in 1950. More recently, Ellsworth Kelly, the famous painter, moved to Spencertown in 1970 and lived and had his studio here until his death a few years ago. The population has rebounded in recent years. It reached a low of 626 in 1940. Today, it's over 1,700. still below the 1820 level of 2355, but certainly far above the 1940 low point. Much of the charm of the town is in the old houses and other buildings that have survived from the era of prosperity. There are 168 houses and some other buildings, schoolhouses, churches, that are shown on the 1888 atlas of the town that have survived, including most of those that existed in the two hamlets. The buildings go back as early as 1760, most of them from the early 1800s. I wrote a book on the subject for the Auschwitz Historical Society in 2018 in conjunction with the town's bicentennial. It's called The Old Houses of Auschwitz, and it has the history of the town and the history of every one of those individual 168 buildings. I'm not here hawking the book because we don't have any left to sell, really, but you can find it in local libraries if anybody's interested in reading more. Today's Auschwitz has more than just the old houses. Granted, there's not much commerce. We have two good places to eat breakfast and lunch in Spencertown, the Spencertown store and Dan's Diner on Route 203. You can also buy insurance in Spencertown at the Johnny Walker Insurance Agency, which is in an old building that for almost 200 years served as one of the town's general stores. But there's more than those few establishments. We have two solid volunteer fire companies in Auschwitz and Spencertown. Each of them was able to finance and build a superb new firehouse within the last few years, raising the money entirely locally. We have the Spencertown Academy. It was a private school from 1847 to 1871. Then for the next century, it was a public school. And then in the 1970s, it was turned into a performing and visual arts center, which is one of regional renown. We have the Auschwitz Historical Society. I think it has the largest membership of any local historical society in the county. It has a beautiful campus called Old Auschwitz on Route 22 with historic buildings. It puts on two major festivals and an active schedule of programs each year. We have a beautiful new town hall. It's the old Spencertown Methodist Church, built in 1836, which has been repurposed into a town hall through the financial generosity of the Ellsworth Kelly Foundation, headed by Jack Shear. We will also soon have, in our old town hall in Spencertown, a local history museum. I'm spending most of my time setting that up currently. And it's appropriate we have a local history museum because Auschwitz is a town that's still very much in touch with and appreciates its past. The historic buildings, of course, are all around us. I mentioned that both hamlets are now designated historic districts. The roads of the town are pretty much the same roads as were here in the 1700s and early 1800s. Some have been straightened a little bit, some are now paved, but they're basically the same roads. Over 50 of our residents today are direct descendants of the earliest settlers of the town in the 1700s. So, very much in touch with our past.